Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Oh, my goodness. My name's Polly, and I'm an alcoholic. By God's grace, in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977, and for that I am eternally grateful. And thank you. Thank you. I am so excited to be here. There's no place on earth like Yosemite. There's no place on earth. As Dave says, this is his cathedral. And he loves it. And you'll hear about that from him. But he's backpacked this whole country for many, many, many years. And we love it here. And we've been to this conference before. And I tell you, when we got invited to come again, I was screaming. Oh, my God, we're going to get to go to Yosemite. And the good news is Dave and I moved from Southern California to Birch Bay, Washington. And we lived up there for about 8 years, and then we just moved to Jacksonville, Florida. I know that sounds really crazy. These two old people just keep moving, you know, around. But at any rate, it's when we got invited to come here, it was just so fabulous. And just being here since this morning, just running into people, walking down the trails, just people we know and we haven't seen for ages, and they've moved different places. And it's just, you know, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're new or nearly new, whatever your deal is, just keep coming back, because you'll just keep running into each other. It's just fabulous. And it just gets you on a high to just see all these people. I mean, tonight I feel like I've run into people I haven't seen in years since Southern California. And it's fabulous. So anyway, thank you for having us. Thank you. Thank you. You just made Dave and I are just so excited to be here. Jenny, thank you for all the things that you've done. Thank you for keeping in touch. And thanks, Keith, for inviting us to start with. And it's just thank you. Thank you for being so attentive to us. Anyway, I guess what I'm supposed to do, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that I'm supposed to share in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like today. And I'm going to do the very best I can to share that with you. One of the things that I would like to tell you is that I love my life. I love the life that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. And because of that, I am busier in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous than I have ever been. I sponsor more people than I have ever sponsored, and I'm into more service than I've ever been into. And the reason is, it's very selfish. I love what I have, and I don't want to lose it. I just don't want to lose what I have. And I know that this book tells me that in order to keep what I have, I got to keep doing what I'm doing. And as long as I do that, I know that I get to share the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an only child from non-alcoholic parents. So I'm going to just tell you that I'm living, breathing proof that you can be an alcoholic as described in the doctor's opinion and not come from the disease of alcoholism. My parents did not drink. Now, one of the things that, and I really didn't even know an alcoholic till I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am a military wife, and my first husband and I spent 22 years in the military. And there is nobody in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that I know of, that we were with, that need to be in here. I just don't know of anybody who's an alcoholic. So what happened is I didn't even know what an alcoholic was. Now, I had seen Days of Wine and Roses and I'll Cry Tomorrow, but I didn't seem to get all that. I mean, that just was a movie to me. And I didn't realize that that was me. Because I just didn't have any, I just didn't have a kind of a barometer of what a measuring stick to what alcoholism was. What I do believe, though, is I have a theory. Now, whether I'll never be able to prove this theory, but I believe it. Now, I'm raised Southern Baptist. Now, if any of you are Southerners, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. I don't have to explain it. I live in the South again now, and, you know, especially down in Texas where I grew up, seemed like right where they gave the Bible Belt an extra pull. But what happened was, is one of the things, if you're raised Southern Baptist, is thou shall not drink. And there was things, you know, going on. I don't know what happened. Clancy talks about alcoholism, a disease of perception. And what that is I don't hear things the way they really are. I don't see things the way they really are. My perception of reality is distorted. And what happened was, is these Baptist preachers would stand up there at the podium and they'd start screaming things like, you're born a sinner. You're going to burn in hell. And I mean, you know, I would just sit there like 9 years old and think, how did I get so bad so fast? You know, but what happened was, it seemed like there was this God up there and he was just red-faced and mad. And whatever you did, he was going to get you. And that was my perception of God. Terrified. So when we went to church and they said, thou shalt not drink, my parents didn't. I have a theory. And I'll never be able to prove it. But the theory is that I believe had my daddy taken a drink, he would have been an alcoholic. Because everything else was there. He was restless, irritable, and discontent. And my mother and I'd walk around on eggshells because we'd do anything so that he just would not have a fit of rage. And my mom would say things like, Polly, be really nice so daddy doesn't have one of his fits. So what would happen is I believe that he was out of control with his anger and his rage because I was out of control with my anger and rage. That's what happened to me. And I believe that he would have been an alcoholic had he took a drink of alcohol. One of the things that I love about the inventory steps and what I love about my sponsor and what he did for me and I do the same thing for the women I sponsor. He said, Polly, before I hear your inventory, I want to hear your parents' story. And so what happened was, is I was able to tell him that my parents were both abused children. And what happened is, just like an alcoholic and an Al-Anon, they found each other. Now, they had different reactions to the same thing. My father was angry and rageful, and my mother was closed in and shut down. And that was the way they dealt with what had happened with them. Now, I am an only child. I read a book not too long ago. Well, it's been some years ago. It was about Clarence Snyder's life. And it was called How It Worked. And in this book, the author says, there seems to be two things that cause alcoholism. Being loved too much or not enough. And if that's the truth, for me, it was being loved too much. My parents absolutely loved and adored me. But what happens is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that we cannot transmit that which we do not have. And what happened is my parents had no self-worth. And no matter how many times my daddy told me how beautiful I was, how pretty I was, my mom would make me all of these. I took dancing and gymnastics, and she'd make me all these beautiful costumes, and she worked. I was a latchkey kid, and believe me, when I was a little girl, mothers didn't work. And what happened was my mother did. And she would sit up at night and make me all these costumes and then go to work. She sacrificed for me. And what happened was, is I was someone who you've heard all of us say, I just never felt like I was enough. No matter what I did, no matter how, what happened, I never ever had that feeling of what I perceive is self-worth. But sometimes I don't know if I have it today. What I know is that if I go help another person, that gives me self-esteem. When I'm feeling the best about myself is when I am working with another alcoholic and when I am of service in this program. Now, I can tell you right now, I can go into that place that fast. You know, it's like there was a guy, maybe you've heard him, his name was Jim Williams, and he was from Fort Worth, Texas. And he used to say, you know, you line 10 women up and I'm going to pick the sickest one every time. And he used to say, everybody in the room could tell you, Jim, how what a great job you did. And one person would say something negative. And, it blew it all. All those other people didn't matter. And I understand that. That's alcoholism. You know, everybody can love me but one person. I'm going to go try to find that one person and convince you to love me. Instead of just let it go. You know, people out there would say, why? If they don't like you, why bother? You know, I mean, I don't know. The book says I'm twisted. You know that I love it. And it says it many, many times. So that tells me I must be twisted. So my thinking is not right. I sobered up in treatment. And I don't think treatment is a bit different 34 years ago as it is right now. And that is, you sit in group and people talk about their feelings and their, how they, you know, the things that happened to them and all that. We did that too. And I would sit in group and I would listen to these people tell these horrific stories, that things that had happened to little boys and girls. And I would look and I would say, well, I can understand why you're an alcoholic, but why am I an alcoholic? Because none of those things happened to me. And what I know today is, I know what an alcoholic is. I am an alcoholic as described in the doctor's opinion. When I take a drink of alcohol, I cannot guarantee what's going to happen next. And I have the phenomena of craving. I take a drink and I have to have another drink. And if I'm not there taking a drink, I'm thinking about taking a drink. I am consumed by the idea of taking a drink. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a real alcoholic. Today I know what's wrong with me because the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me what's wrong with me. And what's wrong with me is I'm suffering from a spiritual malady. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that if I am suffering from a spiritual malady, nothing's enough. You cannot love me enough. You cannot give me enough. You cannot do enough. There simply is not enough for a person like me. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous also says that if I am suffering from a spiritual malady, I am separated from the sunshine of the Spirit. So what's wrong with me is I have a spiritual malady that only a spiritual solution will solve. I'm so grateful to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because the transformation that has happened to me, the book talks about having a transformation. And by God's grace, I have had a spiritual experience and a transformation. When I was 18 years old, I married an Air Force officer. And I knew I'd found my knight in shining armor, and we were going to sail off into the sunset and live happily ever after. Well, what had happened is I had married a sack pilot. I don't even think they're around anymore, but at any rate, I had married a sack pilot, and he was going to be gone, and he was going to be gone for years at a time. And I was going to have to learn to be responsible for myself. Now, I'm here to tell you, I am a person who has never wanted to be responsible for myself. And the only reason I've been responsible for the past 34 years is because you tell me I have to be. You say I have to be responsible and accountable for my own actions. And I've never, ever wanted to do that. I'm raised in Texas. And in Texas, we puff up. I don't know if you know what puffing up is, but. And somebody will say, what's wrong? Nothing. But the truth is, you're supposed to find out what's wrong with me, and if you don't, you don't love me. Clancy says that we're people who have to be treated special just to feel average. And if you don't treat us special, then we feel rejected. Excuse me. And that's the way I was. I always needed more. More. She's going to do more like that. I have a deaf grandson. But I always needed to be treated special in order to feel okay. And I'm one of these kind of people that would be screaming at my kids or screaming at my husband. No one else. Only my kids and my husband. And if the phone rings, I go, hello. Because it is so important that I have your approval. So what happened for me is, I'm just going to tell you about my first drink. Our first duty station was Sacramento, California, Mather Air Force Base. We go there in 1959, and we're married about 2 weeks, and I get an invitation from the base commander's wife with a big red mandatory stamped on it. And it says that I am to attend this coffee. What happens is I am absolutely terrified. Now, I'm 18 years old. I am uneducated. Now, let me tell you, I am still uneducated. But I am one of these people who loves titles, but I don't want to go to school. So I just know all of these other women are sophisticated and educated, and I am just overwhelmed with feelings of inadequacy. And so I go to this coffee, and the base commander's wife is standing at a podium just like I am tonight, and all of us little second lieutenant's wives are sitting out there, and she begins to tell us what we are going to do to enhance our husband's career. How we are going to attend the right functions. How we will attend the right dinner parties. How we will have the right dinner parties. We will be appropriately dressed. We'll wear the right length gloves. All the things that we're going to do. And I am just mortified. I am a hick from Texas. I don't even know where the silverware goes. And this is what is going to be expected of me. And I leave that day, and I'm absolutely terrified. And 2 weeks later, there's an officer's wives club luncheon, and I am expected to attend this luncheon. And I go to this luncheon, and what they have there is a big fountain, and it's a really wussy drink. It's sherry. And it's coming out of this fountain, and all you do is just stick your glass up under there and get your drink. Well, everybody else was sticking their glass up under there and getting a drink, so did I. And I took a drink of alcohol. Now, I had heard people who drink were bad. And these people were not bad people. These were good people. And I took a drink of alcohol, and I mean, I can't tell you anything special happened. All of a sudden, you know, I didn't become Rita Hayworth. But what happened was it seemed like for the first time in my life, I just always had this tightness. And I was just, the old saying, uptight. I was just uptight. And I took a drink of alcohol, and it seemed like for the first time in my life, I could take a breath. I just seemed to be able to just take a breath and just breathe. And what alcohol did for me for a long time is it allowed me to be in social situations that terrified me. And it allowed me to nod in the right places and laugh in the right places. It helped me be able to be in situations that I was so terrified of. It helped me to be able to cope. And it worked. It worked for a while. Along about 1962, I'm so sorry, I've got like a frog in my throat. About 1962, we're stationed in a place called Loring Air Force Base, Maine. Now, this is at the very tippy top of Maine. I'll tell you, it is not. Dave calls this the Garden of Eden. I promise you, it wasn't that. The very tippy top of Maine. It's freezing cold up there. It's like 50 below zero. I've got these two little boys. I know nothing about how to be a parent. Absolutely nothing. And these two little boys are left in my care, and their dad is gone. I mean, and he's gone for years at a time. And these two little boys are left in my care. And what happens for me is I can't let these little boys go out to play. It's 50 below zero. So I'm inside with these little boys with no tools to cope as a parent. And I'm having a nervous breakdown every 20 minutes. And what I do is I go to an Air Force doctor and he says, take these. And I really am a person who believes in singleness of purpose. But I was given these pills, unbeknownst to me, by a doctor that one day, you know, I shouldn't have been doing that. And what happened was, is I was given Librium, Valium, Seconal, and Nimitol. And I'm telling you, if you take those kind of drugs and drink alcohol, you're not an active alcoholic. I wasn't a party girl. So what happened for me is I would take these pills. And I know a lot today, and I'm sure they didn't know any better. I mean, come on, this was in the early 60s. What they knew was these pills would keep me from causing the Air Force a problem. You know, that's what they would do. And I took those pills, and I had these little kids. And by the time my youngest son was 9 years old, and by the time my oldest son was 11 years old, I was absolutely no longer able to function as a parent. Now, I'm sure there's other women in this audience besides me that are an alcoholic mom. But I am a mother who should never have been allowed to keep her children. Because of a disease called alcoholism, I'm a child abuser. I'm a child abuser. I abused my children physically. I would hit them. I would pull their hair. I would do anything I could to just, I was just so rageful. I would scream at them. I abused them spiritually. How can you do this to me emotionally? I took away their safety. My children were not safe with me. And what happened for me was, is that my children have paid a terrible price for the disease called alcoholism. My children, my oldest son is 51 and my youngest son is 49. And it's one of those things that we talk about in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. We can get through anything, but most of the time we don't ever really get over it or forget it. And I think that's why in the 12 and 12 it talks about restraint of pen and tongue. Because I'm telling you, we can go out there and we can make amends and we can say we're sorry, but a lot of the things that we'll do, the people who love us will forgive us, but they'll never forget it. So today, it's really important what I say and do. Because I know that that has an impact on the people I love and maybe the people I don't even know. And the big book of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous says that this is a program of attraction. And I always want to be an attraction. And when I came here, I wasn't an attraction. But today, I always want to behave as a sober, married woman. And behave that way. When I'm not with my husband, I still want to behave that way. Now, it's not a big deal today, okay? I'm 71 years old. It ain't a big deal. But I wasn't always this old, okay? So, it's important how we act. It's important what we do out there. And how we behave. Because, you know, we may be the only big book anybody reads. What happened for me is that I had a sponsor. I'm so grateful that I didn't have watered down AA. And what happened was I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd gone to treatment. I had gone to a treatment center that was a five-step treatment center. But we did the fourth and fifth step was one of those things, one of those Hazleton, you know, deals. And my sponsor said that makes a great novel, but doesn't do anything for inventory. So I did another inventory. And when I got through, Frank looked at me and he said, "Polly, you are a child abuser." He didn't say you've harmed your children, you've hurt your children. And he says, "And you are going to go to those boys and you are going to go and you're going to make amends." And I tell you, I didn't know how I was going to do that. Because my sons were 14 and 16 years old. And I was going to have to let them know the things that I remembered and tell them how sorry I was. And then I was to ask them, you know, did they have anything they wanted to say to me? And I had a little script, a little 3x5 card. And I had all this stuff written down because a lot of times when we do step 9, if we're really nervous and it's really hard to do, if we'll forget it, if we don't have it written down. So I had it all written down. And then I had this note at the bottom that said, "Whatever they say to me, what I'm supposed to say is, I'm so sorry that happened to you. I will spend the rest of my life being the very best mom I can be." And my sons were 14 and 16 years old when I got sober, and I guarantee you they had a lot to say that day. They had a lot to say. But because of this program, and because you told me to take an action that I absolutely did not believe would work, I did not believe I could do, but because I took that action and I followed that direction, I have a relationship today with my sons that is beyond anything I could have ever imagined. I am so grateful to this program. And I can tell you, when I was 6.5 years sober, my 21-year-old son, who had been a really bad alcoholic and drug addict, called me up on the phone and he said, "Mom, I want what you have." And James says when he talks about his story in Alcoholics Anonymous, he'll say, "I saw the transformation in my mother because of Alcoholics Anonymous and I knew it worked." And my son's 27 years sober today because Alcoholics Anonymous works. And what the book says is we have a transformation. A transformation happens and a psychic rearrangement. And that's what you did for me. I'd just like to tell you some things. Well, I want to tell you two stories. I borrow one story from my youngest son because I've heard him tell it in AA. And the other story I remember. I don't remember the first story. But James is about 9 years old. And I just want to, you know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about in the family afterwards that anybody who lives with a practicing alcoholic is affected by the disease of alcoholism. And one of the things that happens is that these children are left with these memories of what happens all the time. It's there. You know, it's not going to go away. But what happens is this can become our greatest asset. It says that we can help an alcoholic family when nobody else can. We can, if we'll let our, you know, if we'll let our dark secrets out, we can help. That's what happens in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So what happened is James is 9 years old. And I can no longer put my kids to bed at night. I can no longer get them up in the morning. They're having to set their own alarm to get up and go to school. So James sets his alarm and he gets up. He goes into the kitchen. His mother is passed out on the kitchen floor with a drink spilled. He steps over me. He gets his cereal, the milk, his bowl, puts it all together, steps back over me, sits down and eats his breakfast and feels nothing. That's alcoholism. That's what happens in alcoholic families. Well, many is the time I've come to with my oldest son screaming at me, because my oldest son is who took care of me. And Russ was 11 years old. And I've woke up many a time with him screaming and shaking me, "Mom, wake up, are you dead?" Because you see, when we take those kind of pills and we drink alcohol, we don't breathe very good. And what happens is that we look like we're dead. And I came to that morning and I just saw the fear in his eyes. And I can tell you right now, for 34 years, I haven't had to see that kind of fear in anybody's eyes for something I'm doing. And I'm overpaid in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You could give me nothing more than that. And it would be enough. But I have got so much more from these rooms. At any rate, what happened for me is I ended up having a car wreck in Irving, Texas, right where the Dallas Cowboys used to play football. And I'm a blackout drinker, so I got out of my car, went to a phone booth. We had those in. Went to a phone booth. Called the police and told them that my car was stolen. And here comes my husband with the policeman. And I'm taken to the Irving police station. And I get to see that look in the non-alcoholic's face who just doesn't understand why we do the things we do. And this policeman looked at my husband with so much disgust. And he said, "Why don't you just take her home and sober her up?" And on the way home, my husband said, "Polly, there's a treatment center, and it's not far from our house, and I wish you would go." And that night, I entered treatment for the first time. And what happened for me is they started, this was no fancy jitter joints, this was a county detox. And they took us to a lot of AA meetings, and I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happened for me is that they started taking us to all these meetings. I loved the enthusiasm. I mean, you were a program of attraction. But I can tell you that down deep inside of me, I said, "Polly, people like you don't become alcoholic." And my husband says, and Dr. Thibault says that there's two characteristics found in every alcoholic: grandiosity and defiant individuality. My husband says only an alcoholic can lay in the gutter feeling superior to those looking down on him. I mean, here I am in this state, but people like me don't become alcoholic. And while I was in this treatment center, I had a jitter house romance, you know, where sick falls in love with sick and you walk off into happy destiny. We walked off into happy destiny for 58 days. And I was 12-stepped, and I was brought back into that treatment center more dead than alive. And what had happened for me is I knew what the problem was. The problem was sobriety. I can't live sober inside my own skin. And you see, I didn't know anything about the steps and the traditions. I mean, I'd just been in a 7-day detox, and I didn't know anything about that. And what happened is I went to a few meetings, but I wasn't paying any attention. I was more interested in this guy. And I was brought back into that treatment center more dead than alive. I had been beaten up and numerous and other sundry things. It was, and I just knew that I couldn't live sober. I can't live sober inside my own skin. I can't live sober. And what I did is I just stuck that 7 days out. I left that detox center. I got a bottle of scotch. I got a bottle of Valium, and I checked into a motel. Now, I don't believe that there's anybody in this room that doesn't have an angel in your life. And I used to call it an Eskimo. Bill says, are you going to tell the Eskimo story? And an Eskimo is somebody who comes and helps us. You know, no matter what, God sends us somebody. And today I call it an angel. I go to so many women's conferences and everything, and I just started calling it an angel because I believe God does send angels to us. And what happened for me is this woman that I worked with, she didn't know anything about the disease of alcoholism, but she loved me. And she said that day that something came over her. And I know that something was God working in my life through her. And she drove around until she found my car parked outside this motel. And I hadn't shut the door. I had just shut the door. It hadn't latched. And she pushed that door open, and she found me laying there. And on April the 8th of 1977, I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas. Now, I'm here today, so that didn't take. But I mean, it's the miracles. And see, this is the good news. We get to laugh about this stuff. You know, people outside of these rooms would just come in here and say, and just shake their head, you know, the stuff we laugh at. But, you know, this is the miracle. This is the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And to be pronounced dead on arrival, but to have God intervene on us is the miracle. Is God's intervention that we get to stay sober. And what I call it is God's grace, that we get to live in God's grace. And Webster says that grace is a gift unearned. I don't think that I'm God's chosen person or anything like that. I just think that I have been given the gift of grace. And what happens is I believe that anybody who walks the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous is given the gift of grace, is given the gift of sobriety. The really sad thing is most of us will put that gift on the seat and walk out. The gift of grace. And one of our daily readings, it talks about that sobriety is God's gift to me. What I do with my sobriety is my gift back to God. There is not enough I could do in this program. What happened for me is, in 1977 was no different than it is in 2011. If you try to commit suicide, it gets the attention of the authorities. And what happens for me is I got put on one of those little 72-hour holds, and I was trotted off to a psychiatric hospital, which gave my husband enough time to obtain a court order from a Fort Worth judge that said I was a detriment to myself and others. And what happened was is I went to that psychiatric center. And what happened was, is afterwards, I was court committed to a treatment center. And I entered that treatment center on April the 11th of 1977. And by God's grace in this program, and it is grace, it is by God's grace that I haven't had a drink since. Now, some people say I've never wanted a drink since. That's not me. I've wanted a drink a lot of times. But it has been by God's grace I did not take a drink of alcohol, and that I was able to pick up the tools of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I left that treatment center, I stayed in that treatment center for 6 weeks. I left that treatment center, and I started going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was introduced to a lot of meetings while I was in that treatment center. And I was in a treatment center that's a 28-day treatment center that I was invited to stay for 6 weeks. So some of us are sicker than others. Anyway, when I got out of that treatment center, I started doing the things that I was told to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. Go to meetings. Talk to newcomers. I was told if I had 30 minutes more sobriety than that person walking through the door, share that 30 minutes with them. We're never too newly sober not to share that sobriety. My gosh, what would we have done way back in 1935 if Bill hadn't shared his sobriety? I mean, oh my gosh. Now we hear that you have to have a year of sobriety, what all this is. I can really get on a soapbox about working steps quickly, start working with others, start carrying the message. How are we going to stay sober? The big book says nothing will ensure sobriety like working with another alcoholic. Nothing will ensure sobriety like working with another alcoholic. I am so glad that Bill did not wait till he had a year sobriety to start carrying the message. So anyway, I can get very nasty about all that. So I believe in the steps. I believe in doing them fast. And somebody says, when should you sponsor? I think sponsor whenever you're asked. Sponsor and volunteer yourself to sponsor. Just sponsor. Just stay a step ahead. I mean, that's all, you know, nobody gets a degree in sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous. What it's all about is helping another person come on through the steps. So anyway, when I came out of treatment, that's what I started doing. I started doing the steps. I got a sponsor. I had gotten the sponsor that had been the director of the detox center that I went to. And Frank, it was, you know, God gives us exactly what we need. And Frank had been a Monsignor priest in the Navy. And he was an only child. It is amazing how God will just wipe away every excuse we have for what's wrong with us. And that's what happened with Frank. And he had left the priesthood when his mother died and married an Asian woman that he had loved all his life. And he was who brought me through the steps. And he believed, he told me, like when I came out of that treatment center, he told me that that four step I had done, he said, that makes a great novel, but it doesn't do anything for inventory. He says, we're going to do these steps and you're going to write an inventory. You're going to do a fifth step. We're going to look at your character defects and you're going to go make amends. That's what we're going to do. And I am so grateful for that kind of sponsorship. And so I'm one of these people that believes in get through the steps quickly and read the book for a lifetime. It's a textbook. Study it. Read it for a lifetime. So somebody says, how quick is that? I can easily take somebody through the steps in a weekend. It's no big deal. It's not a big deal. And somebody says, you don't need forever to write a four-step. It is not a novel. Save your sponsor the heartache and make it a novel. You know, just do some bullet points and get it out. Get busy. I promise you it will not be the last four-step you write. We're going to do this for a lifetime. It says the spiritual life is not a theory. We are going to practice it. Practice it for a lifetime. That's what we're going to do. This is our blueprint. This is our recipe for living. This is what we're going to do. So what happened is when I got sober, the first 3 years, I was doing good stuff as far as service in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was doing bad behavior the personal area. I was doing bad behavior in the personal area, and that is that I just knew if you loved me enough, I'd be okay. So I had to hit a bottom in Alcoholics Anonymous behind relationships and sex that was every bit as devastating as the bottom I had hit behind alcohol and drugs. And what happened for me is that I was not an example of this program. And I guess it would depend on what you wanted for an example, but I was not an example of this program. But what happened for me is that I made friends with Dave. And I met Dave when I was 6 months sober. And Dave and I never had any kind of relationship except an AA relationship. The problem was, is all the men I had had affairs with in AA, a few of them Dave sponsored. So Dave knew more about me than he needed to. So when I was 3 years sober and Dave was 4 years sober, I mean, we were just kids. We're kids chronologically. We were kids in sobriety. And Dave came to me and he said, "Polly, I'm in love with you, but you need to get something straight. I don't want to have an affair with you. I want to marry you." And, you know, something like that's not supposed to happen to somebody like me. But I want you to know, by God's grace in this program, October the 27th, Dave and I celebrated 31 years of marriage in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says on page 164 that if we stay spiritually fit, the great events will come to pass. That's the great fact for us all. And second only to sobriety, my husband Dave, who you're going to hear in the morning, is my great event that has come to pass. And the deal is that he's still the guy who walks in the room and makes my heart go. He's still the guy. I am more in love with him today than I was 31 years ago. And Dave and I get to be retired together. You know, we get to be with each other today. And I just keep thinking, I used to think that growing old would be the absolutely worst thing that could happen to you. But I mean, you talk about the golden years. These are the golden years. These are the years that, you know, I'm getting closer to the end. So I'm more grateful for what I have. It's a whole different mindset. And the other thing is, those of you who are still young, is that the only reason I know I'm older is when I pass a mirror. And I just want to go, "Who is that?" Because inside, I don't feel like that. And I was kidding Doug. I said, "Doug, you just look so young. You're the youngest looking guy I've ever seen." And he says, "I'm just immature." And I tell you, that's me. And I mean, you know, I am a grandma today, and I want you to know I am a roller coaster riding grandma. These are the things I like to do. Woohoo! I mean, come on. I just look old. You know, it's just amazing. And I know it's this program. I just know it's this program. Because I look at people outside of the program and I think, oh my God. You know, it's like, I can't imagine. If it ain't fun, I wouldn't want to do it. And I still feel that way. But, at any rate, Dave and I have been able to spend this lifetime together. And so many great events have happened. And, you know, it's like I've been sober now longer than I drank 18 years. And I've been sober longer than I drank. I've got a lot more years going in the sobriety than I had in the drinking. And it's been amazing. Dave and I got married, and he had two kids, and I had two kids, and, you know, put those four kids together, what an order, I can't go through with it. You know, it's just, you know, you want to put some stress on a marriage, put these stepkids in there. And, I mean, we're four for four. All our kids were alcoholics and drug addicts. And, I mean, you know, it's like, I know there has to be a genetic component to alcoholism, even though I can't seem to find it for myself. There has to be, because I create alcoholics. I seem to make them, you know. So I don't know. It's just that whatever we have, and now all four of our kids found sobriety. Our daughter not always has sobriety, but she has it some of the time. So that's the good news, is that everybody has found sobriety. James and Mike's, Dave's son Mike, who died 9 years ago, and he had, at that time he had 9 years of sobriety. He had 9 years of sobriety. And have all, only him and James have gone to AA. The other two have had, Kim has some sobriety some of the time and Russ is sober. They don't do AA. But you know, that's not my business. I used to think that only AA was the way. If you didn't go to AA, you would surely drink. Well, now I've figured out it's a God's deal and that, you know, it's all about God anyway. And it's all about my relationship with God. And that's all I'm here to do. And the book says it over and over. It's only about finding a power greater than myself. Only God can do this. It's only God who keeps us sober. You know, who keeps us sober? We'll say that, and it's our Father when we get ready to say the Lord's Prayer. Dave and I have had, somehow people say life's not a rose garden. I think life is absolutely a rose garden. You know, there's these beautiful, luscious blossoms with some thorns in there. And that's life. That is just life. And the good news is that all that's happened in life is I have been able to suit up and show up for the past 34 years and be present for my life. And that is the great, that is a hugely great event because life's been in session. I just said we lost Mike. He was only 42 years old. And we lost Dave's son. We have had, Dave and I have been through Dave losing his job. We have been through bankruptcy, foreclosure. We did all that in 1993. A lot of what a lot of people are doing today and what is happening. We did that in 1993. And lo and behold, when we moved up to Birch Bay in 2003 and we built this house up in Washington and we just knew we had, you know, this gorgeous house. We were going to live there. We were going to die there. I was certain we were going to die there. And lo and behold, you know, we are in Florida now. But what happened is that, we ended up, our son was invested with us in that house, and his business went south because of the economy, and we had to sell that house. And I could just see, here we go, one more time, same song, second verse. But what happened was, is we were able to sell that house for way less money than it was worth, as I think a lot of people are having to do, but we were able to go to Florida and buy somebody else's heartbreak. So it's just like, you know, God has always had our back, no matter what has happened of the things that have gone down. God has always had our back. We have moved. When we moved, we started doing meetings in Bellingham, Washington. Oh, my God, I thought, these meetings, we're going to have to, you know, these people don't have a pulse. I mean, I got sober. I didn't get sober. I got sober in Texas. But we spent 21 years in Southern California. I'm used to rah-rah AA. And, I mean, and it was just really, whoo. And now I go and I left there and it was just like, you know, the book says create the fellowship you crave. We created the fellowship we craved. And, wow. And now I'm like, oh, I don't want to leave here. It's great. So what happens is now we're in Florida. And it's, you know, it never is quite right when you move. It's never quite right. But what happens is I don't know that AA changes so much. I think we change. I think I adjust to them. You know, when in Italy, do what Italy does. So, you know, when in Rome, do what the Romans do or whatever it is. Anyway, I want to quickly tell you about my sons. I just have a couple of more minutes. But I told you that my youngest son is sober. James got sober. When I was 6.5 years sober, he called me on the phone and he said, Mom, I want what you have. And 6.5 years before, he did not want what I had. 6.5 years before, I was supposed to attend a function at his school. And he screamed at me, and he said, don't you dare show up at my school. I am ashamed of you. And 6.5 years later, he wants what I have. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's only what happens in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. James has three children, and he married another member of this fellowship. And many of you have heard me talk about Ryan. Our oldest grandson was born deaf. And Ryan, this September, entered Rochester Institute of Technology. He graduated from high school. He was mainstreamed into high school into school from first grade on. He was mainstreamed. And I've always been this person that, you know, I'm different. There's something about me that's different. All of this stuff, all my feelings, I feel different, this, that, and the other. And I watched Ryan go to Evanston High School in Illinois, where there's 4,400 students, and him go into that school being the only deaf child. Now, he suited up and showed up every day for school, and he not only felt different, he was different. And the reason he's doing what he's doing today is because his parents were relieved of the bondage of self. And what happened for them, it never cost too much, it never took too much. Whatever he needed, they did what they could to see to it that he got it. My oldest son was a lot like me, because I'm one of these people that suffered a lot of depression. I so identify with Bill Wilson and his depression. I would get everything I could get my hands on by Bill about his depression. And because I suffered from that, and I watched my oldest son suffer from that. And I watched him in my sobriety try to take his life 6 times. And if you're out there and you've got a child that hasn't found sobriety, all I can say is, don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle. Because on October the 31st, my oldest son celebrated 2 years of sobriety. It's never too late. It's never too late. And Russ and Cheryl have 2 daughters. So I have 5 grandchildren. And because of you, I am allowed to have these grandchildren. I am allowed to keep them without their parents being present. And both of my sons suffered child abuse at my hands. But because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I get a do-over. And that's what we get to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. We get another chance. We get another chance to do it again. And I get to have a do-over. And I'd love to tell you that both of my sons have marvelously happy marriages, but it's not that way. And but what happens is that I just hope we all come out of it just loving each other and caring for each other. And sometimes a lot of this stuff takes a lot of hard work and a lot of love and a lot of prayers and a lot of forgiveness. And that's what I'm striving for. And I know that I had a divorce in sobriety. My husband and I divorced when I was 3 years sober, and Dave and I got married. And I know that worked out, and it worked out for him as well. And I'm just praying all of it's going to work out. The other thing I'd like to say is one of the finest relationships I've ever had, and I feel like it is so God-given, is a relationship of sponsorship. It is the first time that I felt I trusted truly and felt safe with another human being. And today I get to sponsor women, and I'm sponsored. I have the same sponsor. I've had her for 29 years. And I'm so grateful that I get to, she knows me inside and out. And I'm so grateful for that relationship. And there's a lot of times I don't know what I do for the women I sponsor. All I know is if I didn't get the opportunity to work with them, I wouldn't be sober. And they keep me from thinking about me, because I'm just one of those alcoholics that cannot spend 5 minutes in my own head. I just can't do that. And the book says constant thoughts of others. I don't know what, you know, as my sponsor says, what is that you don't understand? That means don't think about yourself. Think about others. So anyway, I'd just like to tell you that I am so grateful to be in Yosemite. I am so grateful to be sober. I'm so grateful that I know God and that God knows AA and He loves us. And I just hope you have a wonderful, wonderful time. God bless you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.